What's happening in Tennessee could affect the whole nation. Stay tuned to find out more.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown. We're going to cover some very important ground today, but let me give you our phone number, 866-34-TRUTH. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. When I was in Tennessee a few weeks ago speaking at Pastor Stephen Berger's church, Grace Chapel in Franklin, Tennessee, dear brother, man of God, whom I deeply respect, when I was speaking there, I actually got to meet the governor of Tennessee, who's been a member of that church for many, many years, godly Christian man, now leading the state. And I also met, before I left the next day, I met with one of our grads, one of our ministry school grads, who's working with an organization. It's a new family organization, Family Action Council of Tennessee, FACT, that is working on some major cases, a pro-life case, and a case that would seek to overthrow the same-sex marriage ruling of the Supreme Court in 2015. I thought it was important enough that we actually devote some time to this on the radio, especially looking at the abortion case and the governor absolutely in on this and how this could potentially have a ripple effect on the nation or one of these cases that makes its way to the Supreme Court. The only problem is, as we are reaching out to our guest, we're not getting anyone right now. So I'm looking at one of a few possibilities. Possibility number one is that there's a time zone error, that there was not a realization that we are 1 hour different in time. And when we said 3 o'clock our time, that they put it down as 2 o'clock their time. That's one possibility. Now, the possibilities, there's just a mix-up in communication and they had it down for the wrong date. Now, the possibility is that an emergency took place. You say, well, what if there was a pre-trib rapture and he was taken? If there's a pre-trib rapture, I'd be taken, you'd be taken too. So that's not a possibility in terms of what happened with the interview. But right now, I'm looking at a blank screen, which means that this entire time that I had set aside for our guest, it looks like this will not be happening right now. So, Howard, don't worry about continuing to try to call our guest. We'll have to reschedule unless they get back to us in the next few minutes. But here's what this means. It means our phone lines are wide open, and I think I'm going to do something. So, Howard, brace yourself. But I feel like giving away a copy of my Jezebel book, Jezebel's War with America, the plot to destroy our nation and what we can do to turn the tide. And we lay out the clear and indisputable evidence that there are demonic forces at work to destroy our nation. You say, well, what's the revelation? Satan's trying to destroy everybody. Yeah, agreed. But sometimes he works in certain ways. And the same demonic forces that work through Queen Jezebel 3,000 years ago, the same demonic forces that intimidate with fear, that kill, that kill from the unborn to the prophets, these same demonic forces that associate with sexual immorality and witchcraft and idolatry and emasculate men, they are at work in America today. And we must confront what's going on. We must understand what's going on. We must recognize that it is a spiritual battle. That's why I'm not mad at people. Yeah, there are people doing wrong things and stupid things and ugly things and destructive things, but the people are also victims. Yeah, they're guilty and they're responsible, but the devil wants to destroy them too, all right? Yes, they are responsible for their actions, but the devil is out to destroy humanity, all right? We understand that. So I'm looking at this not primarily fighting people, but demonic forces. Okay, caller number six. You get a free copy, hardcover, beautiful book, Jezebel's War with America, 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. Caller number six, You get a free copy of the book. Okay, so let me move on to some other issues. In Jezebel's War with America, I noted that there are comparisons that some have made, like Jonathan Kahn in one of his recent books, or Joel Pollack, an editor, Orthodox Jewish editor at Breitbart, all right, that they made a comparison between Donald Trump and Jehu, all right? A comparison between Donald Trump and Jehu. Jehu, as you know, in the Bible, we do have a winner. Thank you. Thank you for flooding our line. It's always fun. It always blesses me to just see all the phone lines light up. So I'm so glad you're out there listening. All right. And we'll do this again in a little while. Okay. But yes, we have a winner. So they made these comparisons between Donald Trump and Jehu. Now, please understand this. It's just a comparison. Have you ever likened yourself to, say, Peter in the Gospels and how he could put his foot in his mouth and how he was a man of faith, but he can be impetuous and say something afterwards, think, oh, what did I just say? It's like, yeah, I can be like Peter. Or you ever said, yeah, I can be like Jacob in the Bible. I mean, he was a man of faith, but then he would connive and he would lean, you know, and he could go either way. And sometimes he believed God, then he'd twist to make something happen in the flesh and we could be like Jacob. All right. So in the same way, Trump has been likened to Jehu. Okay. Trump has been likened to Jehu. How so? Well, he was not himself from the royal line, so he's an outsider. So he's a political outsider. He's also someone that could be called reckless, right? The way it's described, reckless or driving like a maniac. That's how Jehu was described. So, of course, Trump has been described as reckless or like a maniac, all right, by his critics. And then Jehu was really zealous for good. Jehu really stood for righteous causes and was zealous for the worship of Yahweh, which was unique for a king of Israel, and wanted to wipe out the worship of Baal, the Baal worship that was in the country. Wanted to wipe that out at any cost. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. All right? So he was absolutely about doing that. At the same time, he was like a bull in a china shop. There was a lot of collateral damage. Yeah, so he did a lot of good, but there was a lot of collateral damage. And he was even supported by Jonadab of the Rechabites, who was a godly man, who's been likened to a Mike Pence kind of guy, you know, this godly, respected man who's now working with him. But what's interesting is that Jehu is the one that comes into final conflict with Jezebel in the Bible. All right. And she's still seductress and kind of talking down to him when they meet. But then he says, who's on my side? He doesn't bow down to her. He's not seduced by her. He's not intimidated by her. Who's on my side? And says two or three eunuchs. These are castrated males. They cast her down and she dies. Now, I'm not calling a person Jezebel. All right. I'm not looking at a person saying you're Jezebel and you should die. No, no, no. And I'm not looking at godly, strong women that maybe threaten male authority a little bit and saying, you're Jezebel, you're Jezebel. No, I'm not saying any of that, to be perfectly clear, okay? To be perfectly clear, I'm not saying any of that. I'm saying that the same demonic forces that work through Jezebel are at work today. And a figure like Donald Trump is going to bring them out of the woodwork. They're just going to come out of the woodwork. And that's why you see the ferocity of the opposition to Trump. Yeah, part of it is because of who he is, and that produces opposition. And part of it is because of the things he's standing for, and that's producing demonic opposition. So the witches hexing him and the radical feminists coming against him and all of this, it's demonic. And a Trump-type figure brings the Jezebels out of the closet, it right out, boom, public, clear, indisputable. So again, whether you voted for the president or not, I think you can see this. I think you can understand what we're talking about, the spiritual dynamic. And here's what's fascinating, and I talk about this at the end of Jezebel's War with America. And by the way, I have good news for you. If you didn't win a book, it's not a problem because you're allowed to buy it. Yeah, you're allowed, if you're, but I want that book, you're allowed to buy it. It's okay, you're permitted to. I know not everybody has an extra $10, $15, whatever it's selling for online right now, you know, reduced prices online. I understand not everyone can afford it. So we'll give away some more just to say thank you for being faithful listeners and viewers and being with us over the years here on the Line of Fire. But go ahead. If you really want the book, you are allowed to buy it. There you go. And it's on Audible, right? So you can listen to it. And ebooks, so Kindle and the others, ebooks. And by the way, if you don't have a Kindle reader, you say, yeah, but I don't use Kindle books. I don't buy from Amazon. It's not a problem. You just just download the Kindle app on your phone, all right, on your computer, and you can read Kindle books, Kindle ebooks. And the same with Barnes & Noble. They have an app with Nook books. You can do that as well. Okay, and I think Christian Book has an app for ebooks as well. In any case, in Jezebel's War with America, I make this point emphatically, that the castrated males, the men who've lost their sense of spiritual authority, the men who no longer lead in a godly way, I'm not talking about domineering, I'm not talking about some carnal machismo, I'm not talking about abusing women. God forbid, godly men will protect women and cherish women and honor women and esteem women. Absolutely. All right. But the key thing is this, that the men who have been spiritually castrated, the men who have been emasculated, the men who are like eunuchs today, they don't walk in authority. They don't walk in that supernatural faith. And to the godly women that you've been cut down, that you're unable to stand and walk in the position that God's called you to walk in, all right? To all of you, I say it's time to rise up and cast Jezebel down. It's time to say, I will not be intimidated by fear any longer. And in Jezebel's War with America, I explain it's a spiritual force. It's not just a matter of convincing yourself. It's a matter of getting God's truth in your heart and your mind, not just getting psyched, but getting God's truth in your heart and in your mind. And as you do, a spirit of faith that God is with you, a spirit of faith that tells you who you are in the Lord, that will strengthen you, that will enable you, that will encourage you. And then based on that, in Jesus' name, you can cast Jezebel down, just as those two or three eunuchs did in 2 Kings, the 9th chapter. Again, we cover that in Jezebel's War with America. All right. Phone lines are open for your calls and questions, 866-348-7884. You know what? Tell you what I'm going to do. If you call with a good question today and I can get your call, I'll give you a free Jezebel book. How do you like that? So you got to work. Got to come up with a good question, 866-34-TRUTH. If we get to you on the air, you get a book. What do you think of that?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Ah, all right. Well, David Fowler is with us. So I will keep my promise a little later in the broadcast and get to other calls. David, our guest today, got tied up in a meeting, but he is now with us from the Family Action Council of Tennessee. So glad to bring you on the air. David, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Well, thank you. I feel like I've been in the Line of Fire for a long time, just not on your radio show.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, with all these 20 years in politics, and actually the meeting that ran long was with a minister who is being part of the effort here that is taking place in Tennessee to address the Supreme Court's decision about same-sex marriage from back in 2015, a case called Obergefell versus Hodges. People may not remember the name of the case, but they may be aware that the Supreme Court said that state laws that limit the issuance of marriage licenses to a man and a woman are unconstitutional, and that a same-sex couple has a right to marry under the 14th Amendment. And we have been laboring over that for the last 4 years and now have an initiative here called God-Given Marriage that is taking that holding to task, so to speak, and exploiting the limits of the judicial power, the limits of what the court said, in an effort to bring the issue of marriage back before the United States Supreme Court. And I appreciate you giving us a chance to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So first, what's the best website for folks to go to find out more about this?
Sure. If they go to godgivenmarriage.com, no hyphens, no periods, no slashes, just godgivenmarriage.com. And the website is really not designed to be overly specific to Tennessee. So your listeners can get the gist of what we're doing without saying, well, that just applies to Tennessee. There's actually a strong theological component on why, as Christians, we can't just let this issue go, because Bob and Fred down the street are a real nice couple, and they take the garbage cans back on Thursday evenings, and put them away, and poop scoop their dog, and those kinds of things. There's fundamental things here at stake with what the Supreme Court has done. And they'll see our proposed solution, legislative solution. They'll understand the legal limitations of the Obergefell case. And everything that we're actually doing here can be done in any other state. There's nothing we're doing that is overly unique to Tennessee that it couldn't be followed in other states, which I hope will encourage your listeners to check in and begin asking some questions. Why aren't we doing it in this state? Why are we just sitting here doing what we're doing? And so thank you.
So in short, the 2015 decision was not only ungodly and not only an overreach, but in your judgment, in violation of state rights or state constitutions in state after state in America, and therefore there can be pushback based on that, correct?
Sure. A number of things here, and this is not just little David Fowler's opinion and who in the world is he. We have working with us in this and written opinions, actually an affidavit from a law professor that's been teaching constitutional law at Notre Dame for 27 years. He's been teaching the Obergefell case and what it does and doesn't do for the last 4 years at Notre Dame. We have a law professor, John Eastman, who clerked for Clarence Thomas and chairs the Separation of Powers and Federalism Committee at the Federalist Society. So these are not lightweight people that we're talking with. And what they've said that we've forgotten is that we've bought into this notion of judicial supremacy, that when the Supreme Court issues a ruling between particular private parties in a dispute between them, that their opinion becomes the Constitution and becomes the supreme law of the country. And that's just not true. The Supreme Court has actually said as recently as 2000, the opinions of the court don't make what the Constitution, aren't the Constitution. The Constitution says what the Constitution says. And the Supremacy Clause applies to the Constitution, the laws of Congress, and treaties. That's it. Nowhere is it saying anything about court opinion. And so what the court did is they said, well, a same-sex couple has a right to marry as a part of the liberty that's guaranteed by the 14th Amendment. Now, you and I would sit here and say, you could read anything into the word liberty if you wanted to. Marriage is just not a 14th Amendment federal constitutional thing. It's a state issue. And while the state handling of marriage is subject to the United States Constitution, the U.S. Constitution itself doesn't grant any right to marry. But if it does, here's one of the issues, for instance, that Professor Eastman talks about. Marriage is now a federal issue. And all of my law professors, I've got two others working with them, that all say, if that's the case, then the state has no more control over incest, no more control over polygamy, has no more control over anything. It really has no more control over divorce, because if the power to define marriage now rests in the U.S. Constitution and the Supreme Court, then everything to do with marriage and everything arising out of marriage is also now a federal issue.
Mm.
That's what the Supreme Court had said before. Marriage isn't a federal issue. It's a state issue. That's why they don't hear divorce cases, even when the parties live in different states and millions of dollars are involved. They say,
We don't have jurisdiction over divorce and child support and custody because we don't have jurisdiction over marriage. It's just a state issue. Well, you've now federalized it, and that means that you can't make me issue a marriage license to effectuate federal government policy. And that's not a strange idea. I mean, we've had sheriffs sue the federal government over the Brady Law, saying you can't commandeer my sheriffs into effectually running the federal government's policies regarding guns. You can't control my Department of Environment. Do it yourself through your own Department of Environment. Well, if marriage is now a 14th Amendment right, well, by golly, go ask Congress or go ask the Supreme Court how you get married. And see, people forgot. The court did not say how you married. They just said you had a right to marry, but they never explained to anybody how to do it. And states just went out and willy-nilly started saying, oh, well, okay, I guess I better start issuing a license for this. And the point is, our law in Tennessee, as most laws, says the only people who can get a license are a man and a woman. We've never passed a law that says you can get a license for a marriage regardless of sex. Nobody's been authorized to do that yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court can't tell my local official what it must do because my state gets to tell what my officials must do. So we've jumped over that hurdle. This is the same as if the Supreme Court said the sheriff in, you know, the Department of Motor Vehicles that has to issue handgun carry permits because there's a right to carry a gun. Well, who are they to tell the state who must issue handgun carry permits? Even if you have a constitutional right to one, that's not the Supreme Court's job. That's my state's job. We've never authorized anybody to issue a license for a marriage defined without regard to sex. So we just skipped over all these important issues, and these professors are saying, why aren't these states raising these issues? My state constitution says, for example, I cannot license a marriage except between a man and a woman. Okay? That statement in my state constitution has never been enjoined by a court. Never. So why is my state ignoring it as if it was actually repealed or enjoined? That's lawlessness, Michael. And she said, well, I bet we would lose, so let's just not even worry about it. We'll just pretend it doesn't exist. Well, what's the next law we're going to do? We used to get mad at Obama for not enforcing laws, right? Well, our whole state is doing it. 30-something states are doing it because they all had constitutional amendments, and they're all just ignoring them. The only courts that went to the Supreme Court states were Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee. Those are the only ones that were subject to Supreme Court judgment. And in my state, the court expressly did not enjoin the provisions of our Constitution that apply to licenses. We're just ignoring it. Just ignoring it. And then the other issue, and this is why I was talking to pastors. Pastors are signing certificates of marriage that define marriage contrary to God's law. And I never thought about it. Because they have a man and a woman in front of them, they think, I'm marrying a man and a woman. Well, that's what you're doing existentially. But as a matter of law, that's irrelevant. You are signing your name to a document that says marriage in Tennessee, the marriage that you are performing as a designated official of the state, deputized by the state, is defined without regard to sex. And you're signing as a minister and saying, yep, that's okay, that's what I'm doing. Well, then you're going to get up in your pulpit and preach marriage is between a man and a woman, and this is an ungodly decision, and then you're going to go sign a document that essentially has a bunch of whereas clauses in front of it that says, whereas marriage is a creation of the state, whereas marriage is defined without regard to two people, will you marry them? And I'll say, yeah, sure, I'll do it, and I'm going to get up and preach against it on Sunday morning. That's what's going on all around the country. And so in Tennessee, we said, we're just going to stop doing that. We're going to get some ministers. We're going to sue. We're going to argue that it violates the freedom of free exercise clause. It violates the rights of conscience under the state constitution. It violates freedom of speech to compel me to sign a document that makes a statement about marriage that I cannot make as a minister of God.
And with that, I've got to jump in. Friends, we're out of time. GodGivenMarriage.com. I'd actually wanted to talk about the abortion case, but we didn't get to that. David, sorry you got tied up earlier. Glad we got a few minutes with you. And again, some important pro-life issues going on. I actually wanted to get to that. Ran out of time. All right. Thank you, sir, for the call. I appreciate it. All right, friends, I'm giving away Jezebel books, but you got to work for it. You call in with a good question, 866-34-TRUTH, and you get a free copy of Jezebel's War with America sent out to you.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, so something interesting happened on the broadcast earlier today, and you are going to be a direct recipient of the blessing that has ensued. I had a guest scheduled to come on right at the beginning of the broadcast, so 3:03 Eastern Standard Time, and the guest was tied up in a meeting, was not able to get on with us until about 15 minutes late, so I thought I was not going to have any guest at all. I was going to have him on the first half hour. So I decided, you know what, let me give away a free book, a free copy of Jezebel's War with America, and, you know, caller number, whatever it was. And, of course, phone lines were instantly flooded and gave the book away. Then shared some things on my heart that were relevant. And I thought, you know what, tell you what, because I thought I was going to have no guest on at all and get to have a lot of extra time. And it turns out he called in late. We just finished our interview. So I said, you know what, why don't I do this? I can't remember doing this. It's been maybe years. But you call in with a good question. If I'm able to get to your call, all right, if I'm able to get to your call before we quit in 26 minutes, you get a free copy of Jezebel's War with America. It's hardcover. It's a beautiful book. And by God's grace, it's really taken off and made an impact. It's resonated when I've shared the message, dramatically so. I shared it in September with over 8,000 people thereabouts in Pensacola, and literally signed books for the next 2.5 hours, which to me is an incredible honor to be able to do that. The book sold out first printing the first week, which we've never had happen. So there's real interest in it, but in the holiday spirit. So of course, if you don't have a copy yet, get it. Jezebel's War with America, available at your bookstores, available on our website or any of the online book dealers. And if you've read it and it's blessed you, post a review at Amazon, Amazon.com. Regardless of where you bought it, post a review there. If you read the book and it blessed you, encourage others in doing so. But if you call in with a good question and we get to your question before 4 o'clock today, I get to your call, you get a free copy of the book. All right? So we start in Idaho. Jay, welcome to the Line of Fire.
And thank you very much for taking my call, sir.
Sure thing.
So I wanted to lay a small foundation for my question really quick, because I'm asking you a question that's theoretical, and so I want to found it on what's not theoretical first.
Yeah, sure.
I do want to briefly point out that I am with you in fighting against the anti-Semites who take Noahide laws to mean what they don't. And mm-hmm. I also want to point out my personal bias that I believe that the Vatican is the seat of the Antichrist. And this will all make sense when I ask my question here.
Okay, got it.
So recently we've seen on the Vatican side of politics, I guess you could call it, acceptance of Pachamama, the Incan goddess, at their St. Peter's Basilica, and dedication of a Mormon temple in Rome in March early this year. Meeting with the World Council of Churches on their 70th year anniversary, and a whole bunch of other ecumenical kinds of things, signing documents with the Islamic Brotherhood, things like that, right?
Yep.
And most importantly, deal that they signed with China that essentially legitimized the Catholic Church in China so long as the Chinese Communist Party could appoint certain political leaders and things like that, or church leaders, rather. Then on the Israeli side, we've seen huge political turmoil, the ultra-Orthodox becoming kind of resurgent in an incredibly fast way in their power, and people even starting to not only protest so that we can, you know, have prayers on the Temple Mount and things like that, but even starting to have, you know, trying to put up a new Sanhedrin and sacrifice lambs at Passover and all this other kind of stuff. And, of course, there's been a talk between you and Smitty and all these people about Noahide laws. So my question, having laid down those things as, you know, what we know that's not theoretical, do you ever worry about a Vatican-Israeli deal similar to the one, similar to the Vatican-Sino agreement or Sino-Vatican agreement that they signed in China, where they essentially legitimize persecution against Christians that don't actually follow the confirmed church, which in China is now the Catholic Church?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's a literate question. You gave the background to it. And the first response is no, I never worry about that. I never think about that, because for Israel and the Vatican to work together in a way that ends up persecuting Christians without also being part of turning against the Jewish people, that's an unlikely scenario to me. I see in Zechariah 12 and 14, all nations coming up against Jerusalem. So I do see a world attack against Israel at the end. And if there is a specific Antichrist figure that we're talking about, which I believe there will be, it's going to be an all-out attack on all followers of Jesus around the world. And whether the Vatican is part of that, whether the Vatican is part of the apostate church that persecutes true Christians, it will also be standing against Israel at the same time. In other words, the Reformation idea that the Vatican is the Antichrist or the Pope is the Antichrist, and you're saying it's the seat of the Antichrist, if that were true, that would also mean turning against the Jewish people, turning against Israel, trying to destroy Israel. It's part of what the Antichrist will do rather than working with. So on that level, no, I'm not concerned about it. I don't think about it. I don't worry about it. In terms of this alleged conspiracy between the Vatican and Israel that will ultimately persecute Christians. At the same time, I absolutely am concerned about a false ecumenical spirit, not the unity within the body that Jesus prayed for, but a unity that is based on falsehood, that is based on compromise. And to the extent the Vatican goes in that direction, could the Vatican persecute true Christians? Sure. But listen, if you go to Latin America, you'll find that much of the persecution against evangelical Christians there is from very, very traditional Catholics. The same thing, opposition in Italy to evangelicals has come from very, very traditional Catholics, and the very, very traditional Catholics don't like the ecumenical agreements. So I have no problem seeing a scenario which either a liberal Catholic church or a very traditional Catholic church could persecute true followers of Jesus. That's easy for me to see. To see it done in conjunction with Orthodox Jews in Israel without ultimately turning against those Jews, that part I don't see. Does that make sense to you?
Certainly. If I could, with just a brief follow-up, would it by chance be possible, at least in your own opinion, of course, that both and would be the case? In other words, that maybe the Vatican might be...
I understand the both. Hey, look, deception is deceiving, right? And to the degree that we come into end time deception under an Antichrist figure, I say we, I mean the world. Yeah, it's going to be very deceiving and very misleading. And who knows how far it will go. So, yeah, in that case, anything is possible.